The 100 Years' War, Revolt of the Towns, The Problems in Flanders, Part 1. So we had the Wat Tyler explosion in England. We've had the problem in Rouen and Paris and other places in France. Well, now it's going to spread to Flanders. Now, the resistance to emergency taxation in France was inspired by the continued defiance of the Count of Flanders by the city of Ghent. Ghent, the original author of the urban revolutions of 1379, had suffered much since Louis de Mal had brutally suppressed rebellion in every other part of Flanders. It had seen its trade ruined by confiscations and boycotts. It had been defeated in battle. In a war of raid and counter-raid characterized by savagery on both sides, the town had suffered heavy casualties. In June of 1381, it lost its last ally when Grimont was captured and burned, and its inhabitants butchered by Louis de Mal's captains. Yet Ghent itself, protected by walls and marshland and by its situation at the confluence of two great rivers, beat off every attempt by the Count's armies to capture it. The cities of Flanders, the German Low Countries, and northern France belonged in many respects to the same economic community, and the progress of the Civil War in Flanders was followed with intense interest amongst its neighbors. Contemporaries who rarely understood the dynamics of urban revolt were profoundly conscious of the contagion of popular revolution. Bonaccorso Pitti was no doubt mistaken when he reported that the risings in Rouen and Paris had been provoked by agents of Ghent, but his opinion probably reflected the conventional wisdom of the political class in Paris, and certainly their worst fears. Events seemed to bear out their view. At Amiens, the rabble-rousers passed through the streets calling out their supporters with cries of "Up with Paris! Up with Ghent!" In July of 1381, the Count of Flanders began a systematic blockade of Ghent, with garrisons in Courtrai, Oudenarde, and Dendermonde. Louis was able to cut the river routes to Ghent by the Lys and close the Scheldt on both sides of the city. This left Ghent's dense population dependent on its food supplies, on provisioning raids mounted by parties from the city, and on supplies carted overland from Hainault and Brabant, or shipped into the harbors of Holland and Zeeland, and smuggled across the low-lying region north of the city, known as the Vier Ambachten. Raw materials for the city's workshops had to get in by the same route. Gradually, over the next 6 months, all of these lifelines failed. Louis de Mal's garrisons patrolled the territory around Ghent, attacking supply trains, killing or imprisoning the men in charge of them. He pressed the rulers of the neighboring states to forbid their subjects to trade with Ghent. All of them did so with more or less effect. The grain traffic from Hainault was the first to dry up. Supplies from Brabant and from Holland and Zeeland continued in spite of the decrees of their rulers, but at irregular intervals and on a much reduced scale. As the city's distress mounted, the Count's attitude became progressively harsher. There were a number of attempts to find a negotiated solution. All of them failed in the face of Louis's intransigence. He would accept nothing short of unconditional surrender. By the end of 318, the tragedy of Ghent had polarized opinion across northern Europe. Louis de Mal recruited knights and squires to his standard from well beyond his own domains. Many of them were not simply earning their pay, but intent on support of the social order. Noblemen stick together, as Froissart observed. On the other side of the divide, a wave of solidarity united urban radicals and the self-governing cities. In Brabant, the citizens of Louvain and Brussels supported the provisioning efforts of Ghent in defiance of their duchess. Liège, a city controlled by the guilds and long tradition of political radicalism, as well as social discord, wrote letters of support and promised 600 cartloads of wheat and flour at the lowest point of the city's fortunes. Even in places which enforced the blockade, the support and supported the Count with money and troops, the city magistrates grew frightened by the strength of feeling in the streets and particularly the tenements. Louis de Mal's refusal to grant terms to the men of Ghent merely drove them to even more desperate measures. The last serious attempt to find a compromise solution occurred in October 1381. The Flemish towns and the princes of the Low Countries, desperate for a solution to the conflict, was beginning to infect its own dominions, convened a fresh peace conference. It was held at Harelbach, a small village on the banks of the River Lee outside Contrée. Ghent was represented there by 12 prominent members of the city government, led by the two senior aldermen, Simon Bett and Gilbert de Guitre. A conditional agreement was made, subject to confirmation by the General Assembly of the town. It provided for complete submission of the city and for the surrender to the Count of 200 ringleaders to be nominated by him in due course and dealt with as he saw fit. Most of the city government was behind the agreement. They were supported by the grain shippers and food guilds, whose members had been ruined by the blockade. The mass of inhabitants, says Froissart, was for peace, except for the rabble who liked nothing better than a riot. But it was not only the rabble who were opposed to the terms. The main opponents of the peace were the weavers, who saw nothing in the terms to ameliorate their desperate economic plight, and every sign that the count meant to suppress the autonomy of the city government. They were egged on by prominent politicians who had been heavily implicated in the events of the past 2 years and suspected that their names would be included in the count's list of 200 victims. The municipality did their best to suppress opposition to the treaty. Peter de Vandenbosch, the most prominent opponent, was imprisoned. On January 2, 1382, a mob consisting mainly of members of the Grain Shippers Guild invaded the town hall and attacked the opponents of the peace. They murdered the town clerk, who was believed to be one of them, threw his body into the street. Two wretches were seized and tortured until they confessed to a conspiracy against the peace before being killed in turn. Outside in the streets, a pitched battle was fought between the partisans of the weavers and the grain shippers. On January 13, 1382, a messenger arrived from Louis de Mal with an ultimatum requiring the city to ratify the terms of peace and deliver up the hostages to secure its observance. So we will stop there and pick up, see what happens next, and then look at why this situation wasn't used by the English to their advantage. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.